When I first came here, Mel Preetz was the chief usher at the Midnight Mass, and he brought a couple of his teenage kids with him. While Mel has long since passed to his reward, one of his teenage kids now is a teenage kid of her own, and she's an usher at the 7:15 Mass. They were here last night, just by coincidence, and Tabiek, her son, was telling me about the science project that he's doing for 7th grade science class at St. Margaret's School in Bel Air. He got two mice from the pet shop, 1 month old each, guaranteed they were from the same litter, both female, got them identical cages. He's giving them identical amounts of food, water, changing their litter exactly the same, all that is exactly the same. Except that one mouse he's taking out of the box and playing with, tickling, patting, fondling, whatever, putting back regularly. The other mouse, he's not. And he wants to see if by the end of the month there's any difference in their behavior. Well, I really don't know whether there will be or not, whether mice are far enough up on the food chain for that to make a difference. But he was quite surprised when I told him this. That experiment has already been run with human infants, and it had to be stopped. It was a number of years ago. Now, you can't standardize mothers. There's nothing less standardized than mothering. So what they did was go to preemies in hospital nurseries, and they divided the kids in the nurseries into two groups. One got everything it needed except mothering. The other group got exactly the same treatment, the food, the formula, the warmth, you name it, except that the nurses picked them up and played with them and billed at them and cooed at them and whatnot and all the things that mother nurses generally do, playing surrogate mother for kids in hospitals. I forget how long they got into the experiment, but nowhere near the completion of it. And the ethical people shut them down, said, you can't do it. It is so obvious already that these kids who are not being touched are suffering. The technical term was failing to thrive. That we have to stop this at once and start picking those kids up and playing with them again so that they will thrive. So I don't know whether it's important for mice, but I know it's pretty important for people. And that sets us up for this leper. He's been cut off from all of that. We don't know how long. We're not told how long he's been a leper. But presumably it's been a while. Nobody. Not even your wife. Your spouse cannot accompany you into this exile. It's forbidden. You get no human touch. People can feed you. Obviously they do, or you'd starve to death. But they do it by leaving food by the roadside for you to pick up. They can't hand it to you. They can't touch you. This man comes to Jesus, doesn't even dare ask for that. What he asks for is less difficult, a cure. If you will it, you can make me clean. Jesus reaches out and touches him. Can you imagine what that felt like? The first touch of human skin and bone upon your human skin and bone in years. I'm sure that was more important to him than being cured, that someone had touched him. There's only one problem with that. It's absolutely against the law. You're not allowed to do that. Well, does that mean that Jesus does not observe the law? No, it's not that simple. Remember what we saw yesterday in the gospel? Jesus cures the person in the synagogue with the shrieking demon, but makes everybody else wait until after sunset to come to his house for the cure. Same way here, same strange combination of disregard for the law and enforcement of the law. He does the absolutely undoable. He reaches out and touches this guy. But then he says, go show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses prescribed. Well, this is not, you know, take a walk to the neighborhood synagogue and tell the rabbi. This is show yourself to the priest. The priest is in the temple. The temple is in Jerusalem. They're in Galilee. Depending on where they were and whether he went the straight way or around Samaria or whatever, probably about a 90-mile journey. This guy's just been cured from leprosy. Can you imagine the physical shape that he's in? He doesn't have any money. He's not going to hitch a ride on a donkey cart. He's going to walk 90 miles to Jerusalem. If he can make 7 or 8 miles a day, leaving a little time left for begging, eating, and sleeping, it'll take him 2 weeks to walk to Jerusalem to show himself to the priest. And 2 weeks to walk back. That's a month on the road at serious pilgrimage pace, you know, for him, his condition. That's quite a burden. But that's the law. And Jesus believes in the law. The law is important. It's an important part of our covenant faithfulness. Because I am your God, I'm going to lead you into the promised land, so forth, so forth. Because you are my people, here's how I want you to live. Here's this Torah. Go keep it. To disregard the Torah is to disregard your relationship with God. Jesus is not about to do that. He enforces this 4-week pilgrimage, 2 weeks down and 2 weeks back, on this man just beginning to recover from leprosy. And yet, he reaches out first and touches him. Law is that important to him, but he jumps completely over the law here to show compassion to this man who hasn't been touched in, lo, these many years. That presents a precedent for us. Unfortunately, it's a complicated precedent. If Jesus were simply a legalist, here is the law, follow the law, well, no matter else what happens, follow the law, that would be simple. We can learn rules, we can follow rules. If Jesus said, the law is an ass, disregard the law, do what seems right. We all have our own idea of what seems right. We can do that. That's not very hard. Neither of those may lead to perfect solutions, but they're not very hard. What Jesus does, what Jesus asks us to do, I think will lead to a better solution, at least most of the time. But it's a lot harder. It means, first of all, respect the law. Civil law, church law, God's law, whatever law there is. It is a part of our covenant respectively with each other, with our community, with our God. Follow the law. But don't be a slave to the law. Know that there are times when you must stand up against the law. There are times when you must transcend the law. And they won't be simple to determine either. Sometimes they'll just sort of hit you in the face. But more often than not, when you're tempted to do that, it's really more for your own convenience than for anything else. Well, you know, this law really doesn't apply to me right here and now because blah, 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 you know. So I'll cut myself a little slack. Being authentic about the law means holding myself accountable for those kind of decisions, letting others hold me accountable for those kind of decisions. And yet still being willing to make decisions that say, no, here is a case where human compassion must trump the law. Here is a case where such and such must trump the law. Here is a case where some higher, more urgent value must trump the law. And being willing to be held accountable for that, both in the court of our own conscience and in the appropriate civil and ecclesiastical fora, if necessary. It's a little more difficult, a little more sophisticated, a more complicated approach to the law. It would be easy to give this wonderful sermon on human compassion and forget the law and just go with compassion. Or give this nice, simple sermon on the law, follow the law, and everything will be all right. God will take care of it. But neither of those seem to quite make account of who Jesus is, the way Jesus lives that out. If we take this example, where he does the absolutely unthinkable, I mean, transgresses one of the highest taboos in the law, touching a leper, and yet turns right around and imposes a four-week pilgrimage on foot on this guy in order to observe the law. Keep that contradiction in your mind. It doesn't simplify anything. Rather complicates it more. But it may, perhaps, have the advantage of making it more authentic. Isn't that nice? Aren't I wonderful at making work for my friends? Unfortunately, I'm afraid that's what discipleship is about. God makes work for us all.